Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call hosted by Yanis. My name's Alison, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key star zero on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded for replay purposes, and I'd now like to hand over to Yanis. Please go ahead.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Safety Hour. My name is Yanis. I'm the Health Safety Advisor for MinerWorks, and I'll be sort of running the Safety Hour today. For those who don't know me, I'm actually the third winner on the photo competition. I'm the one with a donkey who's eating my shirt as I was taking a selfie, and I thought that would be a great idea to push it forward on other competitions. So I did get third place, and thank you very much for those who voted for it. Now, before I continue with the slides I have for you today, I'll pass you over to Steve Corey, so he will go through the accidents and statistics from last week.
Okay. Good afternoon, Wessex. Yep, we've got Steve Corey, the Route Accident Assurance Investigator for Wessex. Nice to hear you all on the call. Not that I can hear you, that is, of course. So the stats for last week. So safety hour attendance last week was 75%. So good improvement there with a target of 67. So thank you very much for those that carry that out. Thank you very much. Close calls. Unfortunately, we've had a bit of a drop to 26 with a target of 58. We all often talk about targets, but of course, close calls is what it's all about. And you know, to spot those things that are of any danger, to prevent injury, etc., is really key. I've raised one this morning myself, so one to assist us with that, please. So really good ones in an ideal world, but also those very minor ones that can be potentially a precursor to others. So the percentage of close calls closed in 90 days is 89, so again above target set of 85, so thanks to those that get involved with closeouts. It's all very good seeing those kind of targets in green. So moving on to the incidents from last week, things that I've selected for you guys this week. Obviously it's not the full story, and you can read into them sometimes a little bit more deeper than they actually are. So if you do know the individuals behind this event or the management team or the WorkSafe Health and Safety Advisors, please go to them for further information about the event should you require that kind of detail. So the first one was a bit unfortunate on the 7th of the 7th, a staff assault. Basically, a S&T team leader was working within the location cabinet at Foxtrot 194 signal at Virginia Water when two teenagers were throwing stones at him. Now the teenagers were obviously the other side of the boundary fence, but one of those stones struck him on the knee, aggravating an existing injury, and unfortunately he had to take time off work for that particular injury. The golden hour was applied and chain of care carried out, of course, as you'd probably expect, but an unfortunate event nevertheless. The next one on the 7th of the 7th was a Cat A spad at East Putney with one of our underground services. The actual driver passed the signal Whiskey 3590 repeater at red by approximately 2 to 3 coaches through a loss of concentration. There was no allegation made against the signalling equipment, so this incident will be followed up locally by the London Underground and Transport for London team. Next one is on the 9th of the 7th, 2007, something very, very relevant to all you guys that work with Hotworks, etc. A Works Delivery Signal Works senior technician reported that a vehicle fire had occurred within the maintenance vehicle at Dundonald Road at Wimbledon. The fire was caused by a used miniature gas torch, which had been placed in a bag underneath the middle crew cab seat. There were no injuries sustained, and the fire was put out with a water extinguisher. And of course, the only damage was minor, sustained to the underbody of the seat, but of course, it could have been much more serious and significant. So obviously, with Hotworks, be very mindful of the materials, etc., you know, to be cooled down before you pack anything away, etc. If you remember, we had the incident over there at Weybridge where a similar thing occurred that was lineside, and it, a gas bottle exploded and ended up in somebody's dining room. Not the kind of thing that we want, and not the kind of risk we want to pose to our staff. Okay, next one to the 9th of the 7th, 17 at Waterloo. We had two males under the influence of alcohol get out of a train outside Waterloo and cross from the up main flow across all those lines to the Waterloo International Terminal, so that's about eight to ten lines. And upon getting to the International Terminal, they then struck a Skanska contractor working on the Wessex Capacity Works with a champagne bottle. Quite classy, but that must have hurt, and you know, the Wessex Capacity guys followed that up locally. Next one was a possible unsafe working at Netley, which has since been concluded that it wasn't a near miss, but I'll go through the event anyway. A South West Trains driver on a set of empty coaching stock was under instruction and reported that they had applied their emergency brake after coming across a P-Way gang working in the forefoot. The driver stated that the lookout had not allowed sufficient distance, but post-reviewing the forward-facing camera footage, the section manager reported that the P-Way had been in position of safety in enough time, and that was around about 15 seconds. The near miss was not declared by the driver or the P-Way team, and interestingly with this, it was a trainee driver under instruction, but the driver himself had been experienced and was driven for work for Great Western Railway previously. But what's quite interesting in this one as part of the story is, of course, drivers probably don't really understand whether lookout positioning is correct or not. A lot of us appreciate those reports coming in anyway, just so that we can follow up those events to make sure that nothing was, the safety system work in place was correct, etc. Next one, staff accident at Ash on the 12th of 7/17. A member of the Guildford S&T was walking down the cess towards Ash TP hut when he came across some blue wall-top fencing, which was prohibiting him from walking any further down the cess. So as he went to walk around it, unfortunately he tripped and gashed his left shin on the newly laid section of troughing route and also cut his lip on the wall-top fencing as he dropped to the floor. A nasty incident. Obviously, the fencing wasn't really in the place to where you'd want it to be within the safe cess, and I also understand that that particular location was close called. But anyhow, the golden hour was applied, and on this incident there was no lost time. The last one is a staff accident, i.e. RTA, quite a fortunate one in some respects, but this was on the 13th to 7/17. I believe it was Woking, but I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, but anyhow, the set of Ganymede contractors were driving to a site of work with the installation of an emergency speed restriction. The vehicle that they were in stopped at Pelican Crossing to allow some school children to cross, basically, and was struck from behind by another vehicle travelling between 30 to 40 mile an hour. Quite a significant speed if you think about it. And following the RTA, they were sent home and one was showing signs of whiplash. However, the golden hour was applied and this accident remained a non-lost time injury. So in some ways it's a good news story, but that could have been quite nasty given the speed of the collision. Before I hand over to Yanis again, please remember to brief your teams, etc., encourage them to put their names down for the safety workshops. Those posters are being sent out to for you guys to put them on the old posters, wherever you put your posters on your notice boards, and if you can bring that up on your safety conversations, that'd be great. So we had a good attendance on quite a few of those last year, Woking being the main one, but the first one is in Woking on the 13th of September. Next one in Bournemouth on the 27th of September. The third one back at Southampton in October, the 11th of October. And the last one at Guildford on the 8th of November. So please look out for those posters. If you haven't got them already, please ask your line management team or your workforce health and safety advisors. And that's me. I'll hand back over to Yanis. All the best.
Thank you, everybody. Keep in mind that I'm with buildings and civils, so my information I will provide have a slight bias towards construction. So I've selected a number of slides from my normal safety hour in order to share with yourselves and try to keep it as generic and as interesting for everybody. Now, what I've got is some key statistics, European statistics, not rail-related in particular, and they are a couple of years back. Now, what they demonstrate is that the United Kingdom has the lower number of fatalities in Europe. So the numbers, the lowest numbers, are United Kingdom, Netherlands, Sweden, Germany, Estonia, Denmark, and surprisingly, Greece. On the other side of the spectrum, the worst offenders are Latvia, Lithuania, Croatia, and Bulgaria. On a more rail-related topic, I've got some of the stats from RSSB, and the latest of information they've got is that the UK again has the lowest numbers of fatalities, both for passengers and the workforce. So it's United Kingdom, Netherlands, Denmark, Finland, Sweden, and Ireland. On the other side of the spectrum, the worst offenders, particularly with passengers, are Spain, with 100-plus passenger fatalities, and just a handful of workforce fatalities. The second worst offender is Estonia, with almost 80 workforce fatalities, followed by Poland, which is approximately 40-40 in terms of fatalities of passengers and workforce fatalities, followed by Belgium and Romania. So just general interesting stats. Now, more for closer to home, the latest HSC statistics and general government information have highlighted on their 2016-2017 strategy three key topics which the agency is focusing upon. One is work-related stress, the other one is musculoskeletal disorder and occupational lung diseases. So these are the three main issues that they're looking quite heavily. When it comes to work-related stress in general, the ORR has also picked on that from 2014 all the way to the 2019 strategy. So the occupational health program for the ORR actually dictates, I'll read this out for you, better management of health and safety and well-being brings increased employee engagement and productivity as well as better safety performance. So they have sort of highlighted that there is a strong correlation between safety performance and good health. Also, the ORR has highlighted that Network Rail has recently estimated direct and indirect costs associated with health and well-being at around 180 million. So it is an important part of information that we need to keep close in mind. On a similar ground again, a Canadian research quite recently, actually, that was in February, has revealed that work stress relates to cancer. And again, there is a quote from this research that it actually has a strong impact on railway workers in Canada. Potentially, we can link this to the UK. So stress and cancer have now been suggested as related. On more on the occupational side and thinking about mental health, some of you may know that construction overall in the UK and in other parts of the world, like Australia, have the highest suicide rates. These suicide rates are of surprise, and Australia has started the program to actually reduce the numbers. The same program has come into the UK quite recently. It's rolling out as we speak. There isn't a tangible piece of information to actually share, but there are pilot studies which Thames Tideway and other big organizations are actually promoting. The overall product is called Mates in Mind, and this the first step that we'll push forward is about starting conversations and talking with each other for us to share mental health and discuss personal issues with trusted colleagues. We as on Wessex, we have done something very similar quite recently. So it's nothing new. It's just we need to start accepting that mental health is one of the main sort of problems in terms of health and safety overall, and one of the solutions is actually sharing. So we need to be considerate to those that may be suffering or have a need to share. We shouldn't associate any stigmas to this condition because it's something that can happen to absolutely everyone. Now, more on the health front again. I'd like to bring your attention to UV exposure and solar radiation. It is the peak of UV exposure now, and we need to be aware of the actual problems. Recent research has actually suggested that last year alone there were 50 people just in the UK who actually died from skin cancer and solar radiation exposure. This number is very high. It's actually higher than people who have died from working at heights. There are 240 new identified cases, and they have been formally registered. So the numbers seem to be increasing. Therefore, we do need to take a bit more precaution on our day-to-day operations. So if we are patrolling on the line, having long sleeves and teeth and glasses is actually key, and it's part of a suitable risk assessment. We need to move away from the macho culture attitude that UV is only for others. It actually covers and affects everybody. And there are several misconceptions about UV exposure, which I'll cover in a minute. When developing a suitable risk assessment and an overall plan for sun safety strategies and UV exposure, we need to include the UV index, which is on the weather forecast. Minimizing sun exposure, so we need to put in practical terms how to do that. Employees to wear long sleeves and loose-fitting tops. Tinted glasses are not for fashion, are actually benefiting the irises of the eye. And as a last resort, sun cream. So we need to follow all these steps in order to have a suitable assessment to combat UV exposure. Network Rail and many other organizations have joined the No Time to Lose campaign that the Institute of Occupational Health and Safety is promoting. And the message, which is online on the Irish website from our Chief Health and Safety Officer, is it's this, and our quality is recognized, benefit of the collaboration, engage with our staff and supply chain, raise awareness level, identify improvement opportunities, and promote good in terms of UV exposure. So we do need to look at the risk assessments and identify ways to meet it as we discussed ago. Low behind UV exposure, it's not specific as such, but the Health and Safety at Work Act does cover the control of health, and UV exposure is a part of the health segment. For those who are in construction, like myself, CBM, talk about an exposure, and the Manual of Health and Safety Regulations Section 3 talks about risk assessments, suitable risk assessments we discussed earlier. Now, the worst months for UV exposure are between April and June. So we are now at the peak of the UV exposure level. It will start dropping from September onwards. So January, February, November are the lowest UV exposure levels, which are classed on the green level. Then you have March and October, which are on the yellow average level. And then April, September, May, August, June, and July are the highest peak, which are red. And by red is it's significant risk. Some of you may have heard of the Fitzpatrick skin type scale. Those who are on the very light scale, they're classed as the ivory. Then you go on the beige side, light brown, medium brown, dark brown, and then those who are quite dark, the class as very dark brown. I understand that there's a political correctness to terminology behind it, but if you are on the lighter side, between the ivory and the beige, your chances of the skin cancer is much higher than somebody who's on the darker side. I know it's common sense, but we need to keep that in mind because it can happen, as I said, to everybody. Some misconceptions about UV rays. UV rays are carcinogenic to humans. This is not a misconception, this is a fact. We believe that it cannot be seen or felt. This is true. We cannot see the UV exposures or feel them. So on a cloudy day, it doesn't mean there's a significant reduction of UV more than 10% approximately. UV rays are not related to temperature. They do pass through clouds and can pass through loosely woven material. Some of the PPE that we buy off the shelf are actually UV resistant, and some of them do have tags. I have seen them on the route, so they are available to use them. Also, sensitive parts. If we're using long sleeves, sensitive parts are behind the ears and at the back of the neck. Now, going back to more statistics, 2017 up to the, so the end of the financial year of 2016, the HSE has recorded in the UK 137 people killed in all sectors. These numbers are quite staggering, and they don't seem to be dropping very much. They have dropped off 15, 20 years ago, but in recent years they seem to be a bit average. So the average number of deaths is 134, and this year we have minus 137. So as you can see, it's pretty much on the mean. Now, in construction, 30 construction workers sustained fatal injuries last year. 30 is quite a hard number, and the annual average is 39. So I guess 30 is lower than 39, which is great, but it's not far off, and not which we are achieving. 31 workers in general were killed by moving vehicles, and this is not trains. 25 deaths from fall from heights, and 20 employees were fatally struck by a moving object. Electrocutions accounted for 8 deaths. 92 members of the public were killed in accidents connected to work. Almost half of those occurred on railways, not just network rail, the overall infrastructure within the UK. So 92 people overall, and half of them in the rail side of things. The largest number of fatalities are recorded in Scotland, with the East Midlands being the second highest, and the West Midlands as well. London has had 10, whereas Scotland is 19, and the East Midlands is 17. So in a way, maybe it's better, but the numbers are still very high. So enough with bad news. In terms of good news and innovations, with Minor Works, we are now promoting specialist knives when cutting tarmac or other materials. Now, for those who don't know, there's only one HSC guidance, and it's called PPIS 12. So if you put the word knife on the HSC website, this guidance will come through. There are multiple accidents with knives that are quite severe because they cut through tendons and nerves, and they cause critical damage. Now, what we are promoting as Minor Works, and I believe some of the sections and Network Rail have banned the use of knives altogether. I believe S&T is the case, so we're going to confirm that at the end of the call. But if knives are abused, I would like to draw to your attention that there are two groups of knives which are suitable and safe for the operations that we are carrying out. This is group 3 and group 4. These knives are self-retracting blades, and what they do is, as soon as you finish the cut and the pressure is released, the blade retracts within milliseconds back into its pocket. Therefore, it avoids coming in contact with other parts of the body. The difference between 3 and 4 is whether the operator uses his thumb to keep the blade out or not. Whether they use your thumb to keep the blade out, it doesn't matter, because as soon as the cut finishes, then the blade will retract anyways. It's just that you have to keep pushing it back and forward, and this is the variation between the two categories. But as I said, Group 3 and Group 4 are the safest knife in the market, and this is what we should be reassessing and employing for the ratios that use knives. On a separate note, in terms of the work at night, because we said there are many fatalities that occurred, we, as sort of minor works, again, we're taking a very soft stance on in terms of using ladders. Some I know there is the guidance, literal guidance on work at heights and dust date, use of harnesses, and all the rest, but I won't go into that. What I will sort of suggest is that when a ladder are used, a suitable risk assessment be in place in order to identify other more suitable equipment are available and can be utilized. This is part of the work and heights regulations, and putting forward the reasonableness test, which is, it reasonable a ladder with a particular operation? If the answer is yes, and there's no other way, for example, it's behind the cabinet, or it's an emergency and no other equipment is available, then yes, we can use a ladder. If there is time and space and availability, then other more suitable equipment like podiums or towers or even scaffolds in other cases can be utilized. Therefore, what we're saying is that when a ladder is used, there has to be a risk assessment behind it justifying its use. And this is down to regulation. It's not good practice. It's a regulatory practice. On another note, quite recently we have trialed plastic ground anchors. They are nothing more than very long screws which we anchor on the ground when using rope access. These screws, they're not very expensive. They're around £15, and they do come with all the test certificates and everything. We run our own tests, and we achieved quite high kilonewton forces of 6 kilonewtons in one case, which is just over 600 kilograms of weight. So they are very, very strong and can take a lot of pressure. They're very easy to use. Screw them in the ground with a permit to spike permit, of course, which is part of the NR standard, and I believe it's Appendix I, and then Appendix J is where there is a list of a tick box exercise where we have to identify whether we have all the right paperwork regarding identification of buried services. In addition to that, the cut scanning exercise we have to proceed before we do anything on the ground. And of course, as we said, the permit to spike has to be signed by an electric rail project manager before anything is spiked. The good thing with that, if everything is in place, is that they're also plastic, and by doing so, it reduces the chance of an execution in case something does go wrong. As a final point, some of you may have heard the route to gold, that the IP is promoting gold sites and silver sites. We, as Minor Works, have done something very similar recently, and we sort of promoted three achievements. One of them is organized sites, where careful consideration to the life-saving rules and home safe everyday initiatives were promoted, where risk assessments were in place, clear signage, or consideration to the public, saving costs through innovative methods but still achieving the right product, and so forth, have been put forward. The second category is a professional response, and we were looking at the professionals out in the industry who have responded on an event quite professionally. In the particular case was a close call, which due protocol was actually followed, and a new supervisor was rewarded. The third category is an upcoming professional category, and the parameters are positive praise from others outside of the direct team, building effective relationships with the wider team, demonstrate high levels of integrity, decision-making, best practice, and positively influencing others. So we have done the nominations, and it has gone down really well, positive reinforcement does help a lot. Now, this is the end of what I had to share with yourselves. If there are any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer. If you would like the topics which are discussed on a slide format to have the statistics and use them as for your own safety hour, please do email me, and I'll send them to you immediately because I've got them ready for dispatch. Have we got any questions in the audience or anything anybody would like to share?
Thank you very much. So, ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star, then 1 on your telephone. Please record your name and press the hash key. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star 2. All questions will be answered in order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. Just to remind you, it's star, then 1 on your telephone. Please record your name and press the hash key. Thank you. No questions at this time. Thank you.
All right. If anybody would like to share anything about ladders or work and heights, I'll be sort of keen to have a discussion because I know it's a hot topic on different disciplines and areas around the route. Let me just point out that next week's conference call will have a different phone number. So do not wait for the email to arrive and store that number on your phone if you wish to. That's it for me and Steve. So thank you very much for listening, and I do hope to hear from you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and have a very good day.